Welcome to the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast with Vicki Nethling. You are about to discover impactful lessons that help you grow as an individual, grow your confidence, and find the positive and good within you, so you powerfully and authentically become the best version of yourself. Be sure you visit our website at www.findyourleadershipconfidence.com. While you're there, subscribe to us via your favorite network. Now tune in, get ready, and enjoy the journey of emerging as a leader of exception in the 21st century.
Welcome, everyone, to the Find Your Leadership Confidence podcast. I'm your host, Vicki Nethling, coming to you from Roswell, Georgia. The goal of this podcast is to bring topics and guests that will empower you to become that confident leader and take your business and your life to the next level. Today, I am very excited to have with me Jake Stahl. And let me tell you about Jake. He is a pioneer in conversational dynamics and a highly regarded fractional chief learning officer. He is revolutionizing sales through adaptive conversational blueprint, turning sales professionals into relational architects capable of foraging profound connections with prospects. Integral to this approach is the 2-10 rule, which challenges traditional perspectives on conversation and emphasizes the importance of rhythm and cadence. With a rich background spanning 30 years, Jake has shared his expertise in training and development across 6 countries. Jake shared this with over 10,000 individuals. A master mason and father of 4, Jake seamlessly blends practical experience and insightful wisdom in his pursuit of the perfect conversation and empowers businesses through masterful conversations. So today we're going to talk about decoding instant rapport, the science behind meaningful conversations. Please join me in welcoming Jake Stahl. Hey, Jake.
Hi, Vicki. Thanks for having me. This is really an honor. So thank you.
You know, I told you as we were started, I'm all about people understanding that it isn't a pitch, it isn't a speech, it isn't a presentation. To have it really be impactful and engaging, it has to be a conversation. And that, if you start to think about it that way, then it starts to take down the walls and the barriers and get rid of some of those things that happened when we were 5 or 7 or 8 in school that terrified us of being able to talk to people and really have a conversation. So I'm excited to hear all about what you're doing. As always, I start out with an easy question. Please tell everybody, where do you live? Where do you call home?
Sure. I live in historic Norwich, Connecticut. Literally have a home right down the street from where Benedict Arnold grew up.
How cool is that? So explain to us exactly what a fractional chief learning officer is and does.
Sure. Well, Vicki, the fractional movement is really cool and it's growing rapidly. It's designed to give companies the experience and knowledge of a C-level executive, but only for a short period of time. In my specific instance, being in training and development as long as I have, I know that my job is limited, really, because we're always the last to get budget and the first to get cut.
Yes,
so I'm
absolutely.
Fractional by nature. So the fractional movement basically says, hire a C-level suite executive, let them come in and do what they need to do. And then if you want to keep them on retainer, great. If you want to let them go, great. But the whole idea is to bring us in to do a job and then leave. Why pay us for 365 days when we can get what needs to be done in a fraction of that time at a fraction of the cost? Mm-hmm. And as a chief learning officer, I basically go in and I head up their training and development, create departments, onboardings, train their sales staff, and then I leave them with a program that will survive long after I'm gone.
That's brilliant. You know what? My cousin's husband has done that for marketing for years, where companies just bring him in to fix things and get things in order, and then he leaves and moves on. And, as you say, can be on retainer if things go awry.
Yeah.
But if you have that foundational thing as a project manager for me for years, really, that's what I did. Like, I came in, got the team that was necessary to make things get going, set the process and the procedures up, and then I moved on to something else. So
Right.
I absolutely think that what you're talking about makes perfect sense.
Yeah, you get a lot of experience coming in at a price tag your budget won't notice. And in the times that we're in today, where budget is everything and revenue is king, it only makes sense. But I think there's going to have to be a mental shift in corporate America that we don't have to captivate you and hold you 24/7 for you to do a great job or have a significant impact on the company.
Very true. And it is very sad. It's one of the reasons what I do now after retirement, because there's so many companies that did cut out budgeting for training and have no thoughts in mind to bring it back. But people are starving for personal and professional development. People need that. You can't expect someone to really grow into leadership if you don't give them adequate mentoring and training. And
Yeah.
so, it's like, okay, well, maybe you can't put a huge department to do this, but bring at least someone like you and I in to get something established so that from time to time you can have your people grow. So talk to me about the what's different from a chief revenue officer versus a VP of sales.
Sure. So if we're looking at the revenue side of it, sometimes people use it as interchangeable. But when it comes to putting them at a C-suite level, at a chief revenue officer level, you'll be talking more about guiding and steering the company. You actually have your quote unquote skin in the game. You can hire, you can fire, you can set budgets. Some companies may use it interchangeably. But in my mind, I have it that a VP is a slight step down in the fact that they may not have that skin in the game that a president does or a founder does. But I will tell you, Vicky, I've worked for companies where head of training, VP of training, chief learning officer, they're all the same thing to them. So whatever nomenclature we want to use, I think it's tantamount to the same thing.
Yeah, just getting the job done. Whatever you want to call
Correct.
me, just so you
Right. Exactly.
just so you get the job done. I'll give
Yeah.
anything.
Yeah. I'm not big on titles. Just let me get in there
Yeah.
and do my job.
Yeah. So what exactly is adaptive conversational blueprint, and how is it different than what we might be used to?
Well, I think what we're used to in the way of sales or conversation is we're used to the old adage, well, you have to have a strong opening and then you present, then you have objection handling, and then you have a close. And that's really antiquated, right? We don't have that kind of structure when we talk to a parent or a child or a best friend, and yet we insist it's the way to go with a sales call. So the adaptive conversational blueprint is something I've developed over the past 30 years, and it combines a value-based messaging with perception. So it includes our perception of the client and their perception of us. And it also mixes in, Vicky, localization. So you said you're from Georgia. From Connecticut, for me to talk to somebody in Georgia, I need to talk to them much differently than I would talk to somebody from New York City. The cadence is different, the speed's different, the language is different. And yet, as companies, we say, here's a sales script, go to it. And it doesn't work. So my blueprint actually segments out several parts of the value statement to the point where once I leave you, a sales manager can listen to a sales rep and go, oh, you're missing parts one and three. Let's mix those in the next messaging and make that happen. But it's not like an opening or an answering an objection. It's explaining to the customer how much time it's going to take for them to see value. It explains how much effort they're going to need to put in. It talks to them about what their ideal objective is. So it's not structure in the way that A has to come before B. It's structure in that you want to make sure that each parts of this conversation need to be there for your customer to understand the value proposition. And the blueprint really allows you to do that.
One of the teams that I was on many years ago was where we had to visit our biggest customers, and there was an issue. And rather than going into them and saying, you have an issue, you have to fix it, and it's your problem whenever, you know, it's really our problem. So we went in and we had a 3-hour meeting set with them. We just wanted to chat about technology. And so we asked them questions, open-ended questions, so they could spend the first hour telling us all about where they were, what stage they were in, what challenges they were having, what they've done from technology. And then after that hour, we explained what we did in the last 30 years and all that good stuff. At any time in the 2 hours, if they said that they had an issue or problem that we could help them with, then we stopped the program that we were going to do. We worked on helping them solve that. And if that took 2, 3, 4 more meetings, that's what we did. And in most cases, we could just go in the last hours where we started to talk about the problem. And we had a cute little video that brought to light what the issue was. Right away. But the thing that was most impactful to me is that once they saw that we were in partnership with them, that we really were listening to understand, as opposed to you're going to talk and I'm just going to have my agenda and I'm going to stick with it, you know, that script that you were mentioning. When we changed the dynamics, it changed the relationship. And, you know, the strength of that, the partnership became where many years where it resulted in much more of revenue as well. So I think, you know, your blueprint is really brilliant as you think about it.
Thank you.
I understand the value cadence over content in a conversation, but can you just talk a little bit more about that? I loved how you said the cadence, and to me, that's so important to a conversation. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. I developed something years ago called the 2-10 rule, and it was based around this. I had a lot of people I was dealing with when it came to executives or sales reps that wanted to get their ideas out, which is admirable. And it's what makes you a pioneer, is having that idea that you want to spread. But there was very little chance for input from the other side. And I was frustrated over a couple of years because I couldn't figure out how to make this happen, how to help people understand it's got to be a back and forth.
Yeah.
So what I did was I put police tape around timelines, I guess you'd say. So the 2-10 rule basically says for every 2 minutes that you speak with someone, you should create an interaction. Whether that's an empathetic statement that elicits more information, or it's a specific question about what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. At the end of 10 minutes, you then try and get a summation. So Vicky and I, you and I just talked about what you did in your career and what I'm doing in mine. And what I hear is, and then I lay out the summation. Mm-hmm. So what it does is it forces a talker or somebody who really wants to dominate the conversation to actually take pause every yeah. couple of minutes and interject. And if I'm a listener with a heavy talker, then every 2 minutes I want to interject and I want to break their cadence. So the whole philosophy behind the concept is not that it should be every 2 minutes and every 10 minutes, but that there should be several mm-hmm. reflection points and then one summation point. It could be a 30-second, 2-minute rule. It can be whatever you want it to be, but the cadence is the big part. Because let's think about it just for a second. If I have something great to share with you and I roll over you with it, it's not near as great as if we have a back and forth and have established trust. So the 2-10 rule forces you to slow down, develop that trust, get involved, and then content comes later. I'm a firm believer that content doesn't matter until you've established that cadence. Mm-hmm. And that cadence involves trust building. And what my clients find is something I know already, but I love for them to discover it themselves, is that two things happen. First of all, you set a precedent for all future conversations. So if we enjoy talking to each other, hopefully you'll enjoy talking to me again. And the second thing it does is it allows for a trust to be built. If you and I are talking for a while and we really like each other, if I make a mistake in 10 minutes, you're a lot more apt to be forgiving than if I make a mistake in the first 30 seconds. So I'm doing myself that favor. So the 2-10 rule really encapsulates what you pointed out, Vicky, is that the conversation is the game changer. This just kind of forces you into time limits so that you acknowledge that and it becomes a habit.
So you say that one or two words can make a big difference in a conversation. I've had those big talkers. Talk to us about, or give us some examples of how one or two words can make a big difference.
Sure. So let's take a first example of converting a verb to a noun, and we'll talk just a little bit about how that matters. So if I say to you, I love dogs, it's a much different statement than if I say, I'm a dog lover, right? I love dogs implies that, yeah, I like dogs, and it doesn't necessarily mean I always did. It could mean just two or three dogs. But if I say I'm a dog lover, it all of a sudden converts me into somebody that's had a past as a dog person and a future as a dog person. But what's really cool, Vicky, is they did a study on this with children, and they took kindergarten children and they asked them to help pick up their toys. Well, nobody wanted to do it, as you can probably imagine. But when they formed a noun versus saying, help me pick up the toys, and converted to them and said, will you be my toy helper? It caused a dramatic increase because when you use that noun, you give them identity and a positive one, and it gives them a sense of self-worth. So one way to change things is you're not a painter. You're not a person who loves to paint. You're a painter. You're not a person who publicly speaks. You're a public speaker. It changes the dynamic of that conversation and who you are.
I have a nursery that I do for the church, and I will say you are absolutely correct. I do a little song that talks about being a little helper, and it
There you
makes a
go.
difference. Yeah, then
It
the parents will come
does.
back and say, he sings his song now when he picks up toys.
I'll bet they're happy to have you around then.
So when you are calling a customer, nobody likes cold calls, but you're calling a customer for a cold call, how do you get away with or escape the typical, hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, and it's a great
I don't
question because I
know.
think how are you is a death knell to a conversation,
It's not
right? We
good.
all know a quick story. My wife and I were out Christmas shopping and we walked by another couple, and I nodded to the gentleman of the couple and I said, hey. And he goes, fine, thanks. How are you? So we're all pre-programmed to do that. One way, and there's many ways, but one way I would suggest is honesty can break conditioning. Hey, Vicky, my name is Jake. And yes, I'm sorry this is a cold call. But if you'll just give me 2 minutes to explain, you have every right to hang up when we're done. I'm giving you an escape route. I'm being honest. I'm not giving the how are you, which implies I really don't care. It breaks a conditioning we tend to get with salespeople. And God, we're all guided by conditioning,
Yeah, for
100%.
sure. Yeah, so true. So it is, time's flying by. I'm going to go right to a couple rapid fire questions.
Sure.
You're talking to us about the 2-10 rule and, adaptive conversational blueprint. Can anyone learn this? Is it a hard process? Is it take a lot of time? Talk to us about that.
Sure. I think I describe it as the hardest, easy process you'll go through. At 5 years old, it's super easy. That's my mom. Which one is yours? I like black. What color do you like? But we kind of lose that. So, Vicky, the great thing about this is we already know how to do it. we just have to push back the clouds of growing up and being self-centered or wanting to talk and get through that spot. Some people adapt within a couple of days. Some people it takes a week or two. But once you get back what you had, it's easy to keep it. All I do is take you back to somebody you already were or maybe currently are to a certain degree, and I just modify it.
Yeah, my one keynote on public speaking, I say that I just want to get back your 4-year-old self, you know, the one that has no qualms about talking, doing expressiveness, being passionate. That's what I want. I want you to be your 4-year-old self again.
Exactly.
The
See,
best
we're on the same page.
Storytellers. Yeah, the best storytellers are 4 and 5 year olds.
Oh, no question.
So talk about the programs that you might have to help the folks.
So one thing I do is I do one-on-one coaching. I do have a lot of fractional executives that talk to me that talk about how to do business development. And part of that is learning again how to communicate. And Vicky, I'm a firm believer that we all sell, but we don't have to have a selling message. One of my favorite sayings is a lion doesn't have to tell you it's a lion. The gazelle knows, the zookeeper knows, everybody knows. But it's because the lion embodies what they are that we tend to know. And I think people are largely the same way. If you're passionate, people will know that what you're saying is real and they'll want to talk about it. I also do corporate programs. So when a company has a sales program, but they don't have a way to onboard people, or their sales have hit a plateau and they don't know how to break through, then I develop custom programs for them. I don't have anything off the shelf. I will build it for people around their demographic and for their specific product.
That's perfect. Yes. All right. Well, if you all have been intrigued, interested, and want to know more about what Jake's programs are, or what he can do for you, I'm going to share my slide that has his contact information. And if you're just listening, you know the drill. I will give you this, but you need to run and get that paper and pencil right now. And if you are watching, you can take a screenshot. All the information will be available on my YouTube channel. So if you haven't, please subscribe, or you can go to my findyourleadershipconfidence.com. But the website you want to write down or you want to screenshot right now is jakestahlconsulting.com. That's jakestahlconsulting.com. JAKESTAHL. So jakestahlconsulting.com. LinkedIn, he is at Jake Stahl. I'm going to turn it over to Jake. He's going to talk to you about his call to action and what you might find if you go to the website or LinkedIn. Jake, it's all yours.
Thank you, Vicky. Yeah, it's very simple. If you want to talk or even explore it further, I'm more than willing to have an hour conversation with you. I'm one of those people where if we're not going to work out for whatever reason, I will gladly refer you to somebody else. So I'm not the type that's going to say I have the answer to everything. But 1 hour free conversation, you can book it through my LinkedIn site. You can go to my website and you can book it there. Personal, corporate, whatever your needs are, we can discuss it and we'll see if we make a good match.
Awesome. All right, guys. You can get that 60-minute meeting. So why don't you just take advantage of that? And again, you want to go to jakestahlconsulting.com/60-minute-meeting. Well, Jake, I believe in everything that you're doing. You and I are aligned and we are on the same page with this. Decoding instant rapport, the science behind a meaningful conversation. And every sales pitch, every presentation you do is a conversation. And I think that when you stop thinking of sales as sales and just here, I'm passionate about a product. I have a product or service that answers your need. So you're not really selling it. You're just giving them the opportunity to meet their needs. So we should all have
well
a conversation.
Stated. Well stated.
All right. So as always, I thank you for being a guest on my podcast. And I remind everyone that life is a journey and it's up to you to enjoy the ride. This is Vicki Nethling signing off.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning into the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast with Vicki Netling, where we share impactful lessons that help you grow as an individual, grow your confidence, and find the positive and good within you so you powerfully and authentically become the best version of yourself. Remember to visit our website at www.findyourleadershipconfidence.com and enjoy even more great episodes like this one. Again, while you're here, subscribe to us via your favorite network. We look forward to seeing you next time on the Find Your Leadership Confidence Podcast.